On this day in 1964, Congress passed authorization for U.S. military action in Southeast Asia. Presidents Lyndon Johnson and Richard Nixon used the Tonkin Gulf resolution to justify the war in Vietnam. An alleged North Vietnamese attack that prompted the resolution was later called into question. As the war escalated, journalists increasingly found themselves reporting facts that challenged American policy. One of those journalists was Walter Cronkite, then managing editor and anchor of the CBS Evening News. For 3 minutes in February of 1968, Cronkite stopped being a reporter and became a critic. Today, he reflects on that famous broadcast and a national change of attitude toward the war.
For those of you too young to remember that lively time and who think of Vietnam only as an era of protest and riots, it may surprise you to learn how popular the Vietnam War had been only a few years before. In the 1960s, we were still a country shaped by World War II and a thoroughly plausible conviction that America had helped rescue the world from evil. Now a new evil loomed. If we had lost the peace once by failing to confront Nazi aggression in Europe, we would win it now by confronting communist aggression everywhere. Many of us who had been young war correspondents in World War II, at the beginning of our Vietnam involvement, saw a clear continuity of American purpose. The debate over Vietnam became bitter because it challenged my generation's most important assumption of World War II. That American power was an unwavering instrument of moral good. That's why it split the country as much by generation as by ideology. CBS sent a succession of brilliant young correspondents to Vietnam. They went into the countryside, and they saw the fighting. From time to time, one of us old-timers would go over for a look. I made my first trip in the summer of 1965. As senior correspondents, we went on escorted tours and dined with the brass, many of whom were our contemporaries. There was camaraderie as we swapped stories of our World War II youth. I came home convinced that Vietnam seemed a war worth fighting. But the camaraderie didn't last. Young reporters who saw the day-to-day fighting became captives of a troubling dilemma. The war they saw in the fields was not the one they heard described in official briefings. They knew it. The soldiers knew it. The commanders knew it. But nobody was saying it. As my own disillusionment deepened, I began to wonder, should I say it?
Direct from our newsroom in New York, this is the CBS Evening News with Walter Cronkite and Robert Shackney in Saigon, John Lawrence in Hue, South Vietnam,
CBS News had a wire service tradition of strict objectivity going back to World War II. Facts were to be confirmed, opinions attributed. We were to report, not comment. The object was balance. CBS permitted only one exception.
And as Eric Severide notes, this is only part of the tragic story.
For 13 years, Eric was the one presence on the evening news with a license to analyze. After his first trip to Vietnam in 1966, his doubts about the war began to surface. But it was a finely calibrated doubt. Eric was a liberal by intellect, but a conservative by temperament. His skepticism about the war was matched by his contempt for the radical students protesting it. But the war was the issue, and CBS viewers became accustomed to his growing pessimism. December 1966.
The government says that what it does now is consistent with American policy these 25 years. The opposition says no, that we have confused power with virtue like all superpowers in the past, that we are intervening abroad not out of considered judgment, but largely because our strength makes action easy, and action is generally easier than hard thought. Perhaps the argument comes to this. Are we, after 25 years of defending the peace, almost unknowingly passing that line and ourselves threatening world peace?
By 1968, the debate over the war was becoming a bigger story on the evening news than the war itself. We got so many letters of complaint from each side that we merely weighed them to assure ourselves that our reporting generally was down the middle. Our neutrality was about to pay off. Shortly after midnight on February 1, 1968, years of official optimism disintegrated in the smoke of the Tet Offensive.
Good evening. Heavy new fighting broke out in Saigon tonight as the Communists kept up their pressure on South Vietnam's major cities. The full impact of the Communist offensive is just now becoming apparent. And for a report on what the enemy has been able to accomplish, here is CBS News correspondent Robert Shackney in Saigon.
For Americans in Vietnam, all those comfortable official assumptions about steady progress in the war turned out to be wrong.
As I read the reports and watched the film from the Tet Offensive, I felt a reporter's worst fear, that perhaps in covering the details, we had failed to report the larger story, which was beginning to look like one of an immense national deception, one that seemed unstoppable.
Saigon Command disclosed that 5,000 more U.S. soldiers were committed to the war last week, boosting American troop strength to more than 500,000 men. The Viet Cong assault on South Vietnam cities produced record casualties last week. 416 Americans were killed and 1,529 wounded required hospitalization.
Eric Severide saw the casualties reaching far beyond the battlefield.
The casualty list from the recent savage fighting in cities the length and breadth of Vietnam includes more than bodies. It includes truth, the meaning of language, and human reason. Down in the Mekong Delta, the river city of Ben Tri lies in ruins from our artillery and bombs. A U.S. major on the scene says it became necessary to destroy the town to save it.
Yet our efforts at balance on the evening news had given both sides a voice and earned CBS a reputation for impartiality. It was now the most precious asset we had, and the time had come to play it for keeps.
This correspondent is leaving tomorrow for Vietnam for a personal look at the situation there. I'll be back in a couple of weeks, and that's the way it is, Thursday, February 8, 1968. This is Walter Cronkite, CBS News. Good night.
9 days after the first Tet news, I was on a plane to Saigon with Ernie Leiser, the executive producer of the evening news. A couple of old and angry reporters helped to learn the new rules of the old Army game.
Because of the special CBS reports, the flight from Hollywood, originally scheduled for this time, will not be seen.
The film we brought back became the basis for a CBS special report on February 27th. It was as factual and objective as we could make it. But it was not enough to tell the story of another battle. The time had come to do something CBS rarely did: invest its reputation for objectivity in a clearly labeled and explicit editorial position. I wrote a 3-minute closing for the program, which, seemingly without reluctance, our stern and uncompromisingly fair news president, Dick Salant, approved. I went on to discuss a range of military and political possibilities that lay ahead. For every move we could make, the enemy seemed prepared with a countermove. It was not military defeat that loomed for America, but something worse, an indefinite series of standoffs. Barely days before the Communist Tet Offensive, our commanders in Vietnam were saying that we were near a successful conclusion of the war. They said they could see light at the end of the long tunnel. Now they were saying that with several thousand more troops, they could at last finish the job.
Tonight, back in more familiar surroundings in New York, we'd like to sum up our findings in Vietnam, an analysis that must be speculative, personal, subjective. Who won and who lost in the great Tet Offensive against the cities? I'm not sure. The Viet Cong did not win by a knockout, but neither did we.
Then, with as much restraint as I could, I turned to our own leaders, whose idea of negotiation seemed frozen in memories of General MacArthur's encounter with the Japanese aboard the battleship Missouri. We'd been too often disappointed by the optimism of the American leaders,
both in Vietnam and Washington, to have faith any longer in the silver linings they find in the darkest clouds. For it seems now more certain than ever that the bloody experience of Vietnam is to end in a stalemate. To say that we are closer to victory today
is to believe, in the face of the evidence, the optimists who have been wrong in the past. To say that we are mired in stalemate seems the only realistic, if unsatisfactory, conclusion. On the off chance the military and political analysts are right, in the next few months we must test the enemy's intentions in case this is indeed his last big gasp before negotiations. But it is increasingly clear to this reporter that the only rational way out then will be to negotiate, not as victors, but as an honorable people who lived up to their pledge to defend democracy and did the best they could. This is Walter Cronkite. Good night.
In a moment of bitter national controversy, an accumulated impartiality suddenly had enormous value. By holding our fire until the target was clear and the moment was ripe, we were able to make a single shot count in ways we could not have anticipated. Perhaps for many, that short editorial helped make an honest skepticism not only respectable, but necessary and patriotic. For me, it represented a final break from notions I had been carrying forward from World War II. Then we were protected by an elaborate system of press censorship. It screened all copy for security. We had our disputes with the censors. But in the larger scheme, censorship protected security and made it safe for officers to speak to the press with candor and trust. They knew it protected them, too. Perhaps I expected a similar trust when I first went to Vietnam in 1965. It was ironic that it would be the absence of censorship in Vietnam that would undermine that trust. In an open war, officers were now obliged to guard their words carefully. It was the policy that needed protection, not security. When that policy failed, Vietnam became the last American war in which the military forces acknowledged an important American right, the right of the American people to independent reports on how their troops were performing in their name. Since then, with the rarest exceptions, only authorized military personnel have been permitted to accompany our forces into action. Thus, only those subject to military discipline are entrusted to record by word and picture the history on which our nation will be judged and our future decided. The absence of independent reporting not only diminishes an American right, it diminishes history, the kind that now will never be written. For NPR News, this is Walter Cronkite.